It is 9:30 on July 17th, 2026. And I'm going to call to order this variance reheard hearing by the Santa Barbara County Air Pollution Control District Hearing Board. Please note, this meeting is being recorded. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Dr. Colomé? Mr. Cook?
Here.
Mr. Cox? Mr. Saperstein?
Here.
And Chair Dressler?
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. Before we begin today's meeting, since we have remote access available for this meeting, I'm going to ask the clerk to review some Zoom housekeeping information for those participating remotely.
Thank you. For those of us joining us via Zoom, you will be on mute upon entry. If you wish to speak, please use the raise hand button found by clicking the reactions button in your Zoom toolbar and selecting raise hand. The host will see your request and turn your mic on. Please unmute when it is your turn to speak. Please state your name clearly each time before you address the hearing board for the record. If you experience any technical difficulties or are disconnected, please attempt rejoining using the same Zoom link. Thank you, and that concludes the housekeeping information.
All right. Today's matter of business is the rehearing of a 90-day variance request. Will the clerk please read the case into the record?
Case number 2026-07N, 90-day variance rehearing. To consider a 90-day variance from District Rule 206, Part 70 permit to operate 9102-R7, conditions 9C3A, 9CB1, and 9C18, unplanned flaring only, submitted on May 22, 2026 for continued operation of the petitioner's flare during unplanned flaring events through June 30, 2026. The petitioner operates the equipment at Platform Heritage located in the Santa Ynez unit on lease track OCS P0182, approximately 25 miles west of the city of Santa Barbara, California.
Thank you, Lori. First, we're going to start with the swearing in of all witnesses that are going to be providing evidence in this hearing. So will anybody who is going to be providing evidence in this hearing please stand and raise your right hand. And then we will deal with the people via Zoom in a second. But the all the Zoom members, please raise your right hand as well. Do you solemnly swear or affirm under penalty of perjury in the accordance with the laws of California that your testimony in this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Please, each participant who's been sworn in, please state your name, affiliation, and affirm the oath.
Yes, Patrice Survivor-Sable.
Yes, Trent Fontenot-Sable.
Yes, Eric Kett, San Barbara County Air Pollution.
Now, Lori, will you handle the Zoom people?
Caitlin, whenever you're ready, please unmute.
Caitlin McNally with the district, I do.
That is everyone on Zoom.
That's it?
Yes.
All right. So all the witnesses have been sworn in. At this time, I'm going to ask the petitioner to make their case. During your presentation, be sure to include a response to all six findings required for the approval of this variance. Those findings include whether or not you were or will be in violation, that noncompliance was due to conditions beyond reasonable control requiring compliance would either be a unreasonable taking of property or a closing of the business, that the closing or the taking would be without benefit of reducing air pollution, and during the period of the variances and effects, excess emissions will be reduced to the maximum extent feasible. And finally, during the period of the variances in effect, excess emissions will be quantified and or monitored. Again, please state your name for the record. And at this time, and you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Dressler.
Can you turn on the mic? There you go.
Let's try that again.
Good morning, Chair Dressler and distinguished members of the hearing board. My name is Bao Vu with the law firm Stoll Reeves. We're counsel for petitioner Sable Offshore Corporation in today's proceedings. With me at counsel's table is Assistant General Counsel for Sable, Zachary Fertitta. And primarily offering our testimony today will be Trent Fontenot. Patrice Surmeyer is also here, and she's sworn in to offer any expertise that may be helpful in answering the board's questions, but she's feeling under the weather today. And with that, I'm happy to cede the podium to Mr. Fontenot whenever you all would like. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Dressler and distinguished members of the hearing board. My name is Trent Fontenot. I'm the Senior Vice President of Operations for Sable Offshore. As Val mentioned, Patrice Surmeyer is here, who is our Senior Regulatory and Compliance Supervisor, who testified in support of both the interim variance and again at the June 25th hearing. Additionally, we have other Sable team members here as well. I'm here today because I was directly involved in overseeing all aspects of the recommissioning of Platform Heritage, as well as responsible for monitoring daily operations leading to and during the variance period. My testimony today includes not only the evidence presented to Chair Dressler on June 25th, but supplemental evidence to ensure a complete record. I would like it to be said, leading up to today's rehearing, Sable self-reported the potential exceedances, conferred with the district, and submitted timely and complete applications for both the interim and 90-day variances, following the district's prescribed variance process and in consultation with the district staff. Both variances were approved, and Sable relied on those variance orders for its continued operations on Platform Heritage through June 30th. This full board rehearing concerns the 90-day variance covering the 6-day period from June 25th through June 30th. Chair Dressler granted that variance on June 25th after receiving sworn testimony, hearing the district's position, as well as public comment. The board is now rehearing that application, considering whether the evidence supports a variance for that 6-day period. I will address in turn the evidence supporting the findings under Health and Safety Code Section 42352, as well as the necessary implied findings under District Rule 303. Starting with finding number one, petitioner would be in violation. Platform Heritage is located on the Outer Continental Shelf, approximately 8 miles from shore. The platform includes a flare system that incinerates gases from compressors, gas conditioning systems, pressure safety relief valves that I will refer to as PSVs going forward, as well as pipeline pigging equipment during upset and/or maintenance activities. Its operation is necessary to ensure the safe operation of the platform, ensuring that any gases released during upset or maintenance activities are incinerated prior to entering the atmosphere. The district issued air quality permit 5651R7 to ExxonMobil Production Company in 2023. Subsequent to that, the district transferred that air quality permit to Sable in 2024. This permit was validly issued and remains in effect governing our current operations. No permit modifications have been requested or required to confirm to the district's variance process. On May 22nd, 2026, the date that the quarterly flaring limits were first exceeded, Sable submitted to the district both interim and 90-day variance petition applications, seeking relief from enforcement due to anticipated noncompliance with PT 70 Reval 9102R7 conditions 9C3A and 9C18 related to the emission limits, as well as condition 9C3B1 related to flaring volumes. These anticipated exceedances were due to Heritage unplanned flaring during the second quarter of this year. Specifically, condition 9C3A requires mass emissions to not exceed certain quarterly values. Condition 9C3B1 requires unplanned flaring volumes to not exceed 8.5 million standard cubic feet per quarter. And condition 9C18 reiterates that quarterly unplanned flaring emissions shall not exceed the same quarterly values noted in condition 9C3A. As you are aware, on June 12th, an interim variance was granted for good cause, covering the period from May 22nd through June 24th. The 90-day variance hearing was then heard on June 25th and granted through June 30th. On July 1st, with the start of a new quarter, the quarterly emissions and unplanned flaring volumes limits reset while maintaining a fixed yearly limit. As such, the facility is currently fully in compliance, and Sable does not expect to have similar issues related to unplanned flaring volumes next calendar quarter due to the actions I will discuss, including a number of operational and equipment improvements. On to finding number two, part one, on non-compliance due to conditions beyond the reasonable control of the petitioner. I want to address the first part of finding number two, that the non-compliance resulted from conditions beyond our reasonable control. Under Health and Safety Code Section 42352-5A1, in determining this finding, the hearing board shall consider whether the petitioner took actions to comply or seek a variance which were timely and reasonable under the circumstances. And the hearing board should consider actions taken by the petitioner since the adoption of the order from which the variance is sought. Sable has made diligent efforts to ensure a safe and successful restart in compliance with its air permits. Before restart, Sable relied on assessments by industry, geological, and oil and gas engineering experts to determine that the platform and the associated wells were safe and appropriate to restart. I will first discuss the upfront efforts Sable took to avoid noncompliance. I'll then describe the unexpected conditions experienced during restart, the steps that Sable took to reduce sources of flaring, and the timely variance relief Sable sought once it became clear that the quarterly limits would be exceeded. As I hope you will see, based on these recommissioning efforts and the unexpected variability in restart operating conditions, the noncompliance was beyond Sable's reasonable control. Firstly, I would like to highlight that Sable took substantial steps during the recommissioning efforts to ensure the platform would operate in compliance with air permitting limits. The recommissioning work at Heritage took over a year to complete, while spending over $110 million to ensure equipment was in proper operating condition. Sable had over 180 personnel on board performing this recommissioning work. At least 15 different subject matter expert companies were brought in to assist with this complicated recommissioning effort. The platform was broken down into individual systems based on their service. Each of those systems were fully walked down by subject matter experts in their respective fields, whether it be mechanical, operations, rotating equipment, electrical, or instrumentation efforts. All systems were inspected for corrosion to determine replacement requirements. For components without corrosion, like valves, pressure indicators, transmitters, motors, pumps, compressors, piping, etc., they were inspected, overhauled, calibrated, and test run. After replacement or repairs were completed, all the equipment was then subjected to leak testing with nitrogen to pressures well above operating conditions, up to 95% of the maximum working pressure ratings for the combined service. Beyond that, Sable had many lessons learned from the previous startup and recommissioning efforts at Las Flores Canyon and Platform Harmony, and these lessons were incorporated into the restart planning for Platform Heritage. Harmony and LFC follow different recommissioning models. Due to the significantly higher mechanical complexity of Las Flores Canyon, a specialized recommissioning contract company was used whose team is specifically trained to perform facility startups following extended shutdowns. Harmony, however, relied on a team of craft experts, that is, normal operations and maintenance personnel with skills in all required crafts, but not specialization in restart planning following extended shutdowns. The recommissioning team model was deemed more successful due to the more systematic recommissioning procedures and processes followed at LFC, as well as contractors with expertise in restarting idle facilities providing additional benefits. For this reason, the LFC model was used for Heritage. Beyond that recommissioning specialty group, Sable brought in additional experts and consultants into the Heritage restart team, in particular, experts in rotating equipment recommissioning, with the goal of avoiding the Platform Harmony issues that were seen related to the gas compressor restarts. Sable also conducted extensive well surveys to evaluate well status and conditions. The personnel involved in this evaluation were experts in their field with an average experience of over 30 years in reservoir geology, operations, and well completions. The evaluation included performing fluid level diagnostic surveys to confirm the mechanical integrity of the production tubing, as well as casing diagnostic surveys and pressure bleed down surveys. Additionally, the team reviewed current reservoir data, past reservoir performance to predict well performance. Analysis included data from fluid level diagnostic surveys to identify pre-restart reservoir pressures. These studies indicate that there would be no issue in producing sweet gas from the wells as historically done at Heritage. Sweet gas is necessary on the platform primarily as combustion fuel for the central process heater on the platform, which provides the heat to allow produced gas to be conditioned, as well as provide a supply of blanket gas for vapor recovery systems as well. Second, I would like to discuss the unexpected conditions that arose during restart, despite those recommissioning efforts, and how those conditions caused noncompliance beyond Sable's reasonable control. The restart of well production on Platform Heritage began on March 31st, 2026. Despite those recommissioning efforts, Heritage experienced conditions during restart that were beyond Sable's reasonable control and resulted in excess unplanned flaring. These conditions fall into three categories: well production issues, equipment issues, and onshore and offshore production balancing issues. I will address each of those in turn. Starting with well production issues, there are four wells on Platform Heritage designed to produce sweet gas from sandstone formations underneath Platform Heritage. These wells produce gas with low sulfur concentrations and have historically been used to provide fuel gas to the central process heaters, which supplies the heat needed to condition produced gas before it can be transported to shore. The gas conditioning mentioned is removal of water and heavier hydrocarbons from the gas stream before it is shipped off the platform. Despite Sable's diligent research and studies during recommissioning, sweet gas production was unable to be achieved despite multiple attempts to stimulate sweet gas flow. This was unexpected based on all the information obtained prior to restart. This lack of sweet gas was critical because it prevented Sable from conditioning Heritage gas for transport off the platform. Although the gas pipeline to shore had been transporting gas from Platform Harmony to LFC as of May 28th, gas from Platform Heritage could not yet be sent to shore via the pipeline because the liquids in the unconditioned gas would condense in the subsea pipeline during transportation. As a result of that, all gas produced from Platform Heritage that could not be injected into the reservoir or used as fuel had to be flared for safety, environmental, and regulatory compliance reasons. When gas cannot be sent to shore or used as fuel gas, the platform must maintain a careful balance between the produced gas compressors and the injection gas compressors. If more gas is compressed from the wells than can be accepted by the reinjection compressors, the difference must go to flare. To address this issue, Sable commenced well work activities on June 17th to stimulate the flow of sweet gas. The work required mobilizing a wireline unit, coordinating three specialty service providers, and assembling specialized equipment on the platform. I am happy to report that this campaign was successful and sweet gas is now flowing. Sable is using the sweet fuel gas for production heating via the central process heater and is in the final stages of commissioning the gas conditioning system so that Heritage gas may be sent to shore. Regarding equipment issues, although there was extensive recommissioning pretesting, as I mentioned previously, once equipment is in operation, it is subject to different temperatures and pressures as well as vibrations, which can cause unexpected issues. Initial Heritage operations experienced an unexpected number of equipment issues. Each time one of these situations occurred, unplanned flaring is necessary to depressurize the platform, consistent with the facility's safety design. As I mentioned previously, the flare system is required to be used to comply with various regulatory requirements to ensure non-combusted produced gas is not vented to the atmosphere. Additionally, uncombusted produced gas would pose a significant safety risk to workers, the public, and the environment. Although every pressure safety relief valve was pressure tested prior to startup, once systems were bought online, unexpected flaring occurred due to PSVs leaking into the flare system. The entire flare system was checked multiple times using an infrared camera to determine which PSVs were leaking into the flare system. This IR camera detects a temperature difference, which is indicative of gas flow. Sable maintained two specialty PSV contractors on the platform for 1.5 months during restart operations to address any issues. In total, it was found that 13 out of the 177 PSVs on the platform ultimately were leaking by despite passing all pre-restart pressure testing, and once found to be leaking, were immediately repaired. Additionally, there were flaring related events to platform trips due to moving cold Sakate reservoir crude, which has a very high viscosity, through our shipping pumps under the cold wellbore conditions created by the long shut-in period. This situation ultimately naturally resolved itself as flow improved, although operating adjustments were made to address this issue. Finally, with respect to rotating equipment issues, despite the extensive pre-restart work, there was unseen flaring due to gas compressor issues. The compressors experienced unplanned shutdowns due to internal recycle valve issues, lube oil system concerns, and other issues common to all complex rotating equipment during initial startups. Each issue resulted in flaring to allow the equipment to be depressurized and expeditiously repaired. These examples clearly show Sable has taken diligent actions to address and prevent reoccurrence of these unexpected equipment issues. Moving on to offshore and onshore production balancing issues. Beyond the issues I mentioned previously, we also experienced unexpected production balancing issues that ultimately led to some flaring. For context, both the onshore and offshore facilities that Sable operates operate as a fully integrated production system. Constraints at the onshore facility directly impact the amount of production that can be safely produced offshore. When balancing issues occurred, Platform Heritage had to curtail production, ultimately leading to unexpected flaring. A specific example of this interconnected issue occurred when LFC experienced unexpected separation issues onshore that affected offshore operations. The root cause of this issue was traced to an issue with the Heritage scale inhibitor pump, which allowed emulsion to enter the LFC facility without the designed scale inhibitor concentration. Without proper scale inhibition, scale precipitated in the emulsion stream, carrying adhered oil with it, degrading the oil and water phase separation performed at LFC. The resulting separation problems constrained available storage capacity, which in turn required offshore shut-ins and/or production curtailment, which leads to unexpected flaring. Sable has since replaced the pump and made other improvements to scale inhibitor injection at LFC, and the separation issues have been resolved. In summary, these anticipated operational occurrences arose despite Sable's diligence. However, I would like to reiterate that before the exceedance occurred, Sable self-reported to the APCD to determine the proper compliance path, which led to the variance request. Now that operations are stable and emissions are steady, Sable does not expect any reoccurrence of the issues that prompted last quarter's variance request. Moving to finding number two, part two, requiring immediate compliance would have resulted in an arbitrary or unreasonable taking of property or the practical closing and elimination of a lawful business. Sable is providing the following information to allow the board to make finding number two, part two. This requiring immediate compliance would have resulted in arbitrary or unreasonable taking of property or the practical closing or elimination of a lawful business. Under Health and Safety Code section 42352-5A2, in determining this finding, the hearing board shall consider whether or not an unreasonable burden would be imposed upon the petitioner if immediate compliance is required. For context, the Heritage platform operates in accordance with a presidential executive order signed on March 13, 2026, that delegated authority to the United States Secretary of Energy under the Defense Production Act of 1950, known as the DPA. Following this executive action, Sable was directed under a DPA order from the Department of Energy to prioritize and allocate pipeline transportation services for hydrocarbons to mitigate the energy scarcity and supply disruption risk that are creating vulnerability for the supply of fuel to the U.S. military on the West Coast. immediate compliance would have hindered implementation of the DPA order. Further, achieving immediate compliance would not have been a simple matter of turning something off. Because a platform cannot safely sit idle while still pressurized and full of hydrocarbons, immediate compliance would have required Sable to shut in all wells, shut down the platform, blow down and drain all the equipment. That process would take months, well beyond the period of noncompliance addressed by this variance, and would foreclose use of Heritage during and after the variance period. Shutting in wells and taking the platform offline in this manner would not have resolved the issue Sable was experiencing. Sable needed to remain in operation to allow its personnel to work through the conditions that were causing the unexpected flaring. A shutdown would have also imposed significant financial harm. It would have left Sable unable to meet its sales contract obligations, risked a loss of goodwill with business partners, and placed Sable at a competitive disadvantage in the oil and gas production market. Finally, a shutdown would have imposed a severe and unreasonable economic burden due to lost production. Lost revenue from such a delay would be approximately $1.75 million per day, based on a conservative estimate of production during this period and the prevailing oil price per barrel. In sum, requiring immediate compliance under these circumstances would impose an unreasonable and arbitrary burden, effectively forcing an extended duration shutdown to address a very limited duration exceedance. For finding three, such taking or closing is without corresponding benefit in reducing pollution. We are providing the following information to the board to make finding three. If Platform Heritage were required to immediately comply, the platform would have needed to shut down completely. Substantial flaring emissions would have resulted from the depressurization of each vessel and isolating wells as a part of the shutdown, and would have been very similar to the activities that occurred when the facility was shut in 2015, which took on the order of 10 months to complete. And this scenario would generate emissions of approximately 17 tons of NOx, ROC, and PM. In comparison, excess emissions for the entire quarter were 0.5 tons for combined NOx, ROC, PM, and 0.88 tons for CO. For the six-day period that would be covered by the variance currently under consideration, total excess emissions were 0.04 tons of combined NOx, ROC, and PM. Accordingly, requiring immediate compliance would have produced far more emissions than the limited excess it was meant to avoid. A shutdown, as I mentioned, would have generated roughly 17 tons of combined NOx, ROC, and PM compared to just 0.04 tons over the six-day variance period. On these facts, any taking or practical closing would be without a corresponding benefit in reducing air contaminants. Moving to finding number four, consideration of curtailing operations of the source in lieu of obtaining a variance. Sable is providing the following information for the board to make finding number four. Sable did give consideration to curtailing operations of Heritage in lieu of seeking a variance. Sable evaluated three curtailment alternatives. As detailed below, Sable concluded that those alternatives would not meaningfully reduce the unplanned flaring volume or avoid the emissions addressed by this variance. Accordingly, we move forward with the variance petition. Consideration number one looked at reduced production rates. Although the excess flaring is associated with production-related conditions, the reality is that curtailing production rates would result in more, not less, emissions. Lower throughput can destabilize gas compressor operation, magnify the variability of individual well behavior, which is not static, leading to compressor trips, ultimately leading to unexpected flaring. The platform is designed to operate at normal throughput ranges. When production rates are curtailed, there is more fluctuation in production, which inherently causes more flaring. The fluctuation seen at curtailed production rates are magnified with fewer wells in operation. The individual ups and downs of the wells become more apparent. Also, a reduction in gas production causes less reliability with the gas compressors because they may not receive the designed amount of gas required for operation. Again, this can cause compressor shutdowns, which can lead to unexpected flaring. We have confirmed this correlation by looking at the data since Heritage startup. Daily production rate plotted against flaring shows a trend that flaring is inversely related to daily production rate. That is, lower production rate ultimately leads to more flaring. Consideration number two was temporary shut-in and depressurization. This scenario was considered at the time of our petition, which would have been a 40-day shut-in followed by a cold startup. I think it is important to understand this would not eliminate flaring and would not be a quick process. Because the facility would still contain hydrocarbons, there would still be periodic flaring from PSV releases and necessary blowdowns. The cold restart would then generate further emissions. In total, we estimate those activities could generate approximately 0.94 tons of combined NOx ROCPM, not including any associated vessel traffic. Consideration number three was a full platform shut-in and preservation being the only alternative that would stop all flaring. As mentioned earlier, that would be the process similar to what happened in 2015 that took 10 months, created roughly 17 tons of NOx, ROC, and PM emissions compared to just 0.04 tons over the 6-day variance period. Accordingly, we did not curtail operations in lieu of a variance because, among other reasons, number one, shut-in operations would take longer than the variance period itself. Number two, the shut-in would cause additional flaring and emissions during the shut-in and restart. And number three, shut-in would prevent the corrective actions necessary to ensure stable, compliant operations going forward. Okay. Moving on to finding number five, that we will reduce emissions to the maximum extent feasible. During the variance period, Sable took all reasonable actions to reduce excess emissions, including completing the HE25 reperforation campaign to restore sweet gas production that I mentioned, continuing to stabilize gas compressor and reinjection balance, continuing to improve oil and water separation performance onshore, maximizing available storage and minimizing export pipeline downtime, and continuous flow monitoring of flare volumes on the platform. Regarding finding number six, monitoring and reporting emissions, Sable monitors the flare volumes on Heritage on a continuous basis using flow meters and an electronic data recording system. Consistent with the interim variance and Chair Dressler's June 25th variance order, Sable submitted its variance report on July 15th within 15 days of the end of the variance period. Those reports included the calculated emissions associated with the unplanned flaring based on the unplanned flaring volumes and permitted emission factors. Okay. Beyond those six findings, I want to cover an implied finding that there's no nuisance under District Rule 303. Sable is providing the following information to allow the board to confirm that a nuisance as defined in District Rule 303 was not expected to and did not occur as a result of this variance. First, speaking of magnitude, the variance under consideration covers a 6-day period, June 25th through June 30th of 2026. Total excess emissions for that 6-day period, as I mentioned previously, were 0.04 tons of combined NOx, ROC, and PM. For context, this is similar to the total emissions generated in about 2 hours of operation of a single supply or crew boat covered under the existing air permit. Sable is not aware of any nuisance complaints that have been filed with the APCD as a result of this unplanned flaring. Second, the location and dispersion. Platform Heritage is located, as I mentioned, on the Outer Continental Shelf, approximately 8 miles from shore, well removed from any residential population. There are no residences, schools, or other receptors within the vicinity. Emissions are released offshore over open water, where distance and prevailing weather conditions provide substantial dispersion before any air mass reaches shore. Finally, given the limited quantities, the short and now completed duration the offshore location, and the absence of complaints, the estimated excess emissions will not adversely impact air quality, and the variance is not expected to affect the district's attainment of any ambient air quality standards. For these reasons, a nuisance, as defined in District Rule 303, was not expected to occur as a result of this variance. There was no resulting injury, detriment, nuisance, or annoyance to any considerable number of persons or to the public, and did not endanger the comfort, repose, health, or safety of the public, or cause injury or damage to business or property. For all these reasons, Sable respectfully requests that the board grant the petition by making the findings required under Health and Safety Code Section 42352, and we are available to answer any questions the board may have.
Before I go to the district at this time, do and this is just for clarifying questions that you may want, just facts that you heard clarified. Do you have any questions for the applicant?
Yeah, can you just go back to the part about the recommissioning model difference between Las Flores and the two platforms?
Yeah, so platform Harmony was the first platform that we brought online in conjunction with LFC. So we looked at a couple different models before deciding which way to go. Certainly, hiring craft experts who are ultimately going to work on the platform long term was felt would be sufficient with the lower complexity of the platform equipment in comparison to LFC. Lost Forest Canyon is a very complicated facility, and we didn't feel that our existing operational staff had the capacity or capability to perform recommissioning efforts that were necessary. We saw the results between both models, realized that the additional expense and the additional personnel required for the recommissioning model done at LFC was prudent to deploy at Heritage. We have done so at Heritage and continue to do the same model on platform Hondo. And these personnel, you know, have extensive experience restarting refineries, other production processes that have been shut down for long periods of time.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I ask because I think that leads into the reasonable control part, and I think that shows that, you know, Sable basically did best practice to help start up Heritage. So,
yes, sir.
Yeah, thanks for the clarity.
Further questions? All right, right now I would like to ask the district to respond. And before you give your testimony, please state your name for the record.
Hello, Chair Dressler and members of the hearing board. My name is Caitlin McNally with the district, and the district supports the variance based on the testimony that was provided today.
Does the board have any questions for district? I have no questions either.
Chair Dressler, members of the hearing board, we did receive one written public comment from Stoll Rivers LLP, and that comment has been posted on the district website and distributed to all parties. We also did receive four speaker slips today. And then for those participating via Zoom at this moment, I ask, click the raise hand button if you would like to provide a public comment. And it looks like we have approximately three Zoom members with, wanting to provide public comment. So I will go ahead and call the members here of the public first, and then we'll move over to Zoom. So first up, we have Maureen Ellenberg with the Sierra Club Santa Barbara Ventura.
Good morning, Chair Dressler.
Maureen, I'm sorry, can you turn the mic on?
Good morning, Chair Dressler and members of the hearing board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I feel like you're sort of in a Hobson's choice place, which has been a word a phrase that's been going through my head of not really having a choice in what you do today, but I would like to speak about it. My name is Maureen Ellenberger. I'm chair of the Sierra Club Santa Barbara Ventura chapter, and I speak today for more than 8,000 members and supporters who live along our coast. We urge the full board to reverse the June 25th approval and deny this variance. The permit conditions Sable wants relief from are not paperwork. They limit emissions from the platform heritage flare. Nitrogen oxide, sulfur oxides, carbon monoxide, particulate matter, greenhouse gases. Pollutants that harm the people of this district, your district. Those limits exist to protect us. That is what I believe your first obligation is today. State law is clear under Section 42352. You may grant a variance only if the violations are beyond the reasonable control of the petitioner. They are not. Sable's own application admits it could comply, shut in, depressurize, and repair, but says doing so would cost the company roughly $1.75 million a day in lost revenue. That number tells you everything. This is not a condition beyond Sable's control. It is a business decision to keep polluting because compliance is expensive. And while Sable pleads that compliance costs too much, it's awarded its CEO a pay package worth $76 million before a single drop of oil was produced. A company that can afford to pay their CEO that much money can afford its air permit. And the law requires genuine consideration of curtailment. Sable says curtailing production wouldn't necessarily reduce flaring, while its own petition blames the flaring on production problems. If production is causing flaring, the curtailment is the answer. On June 25th, none of these criteria received independent scrutiny. The findings simply repeated Sable's claims word for word. The board should not be a rubber stamp. And this isn't an isolated request. Platform Heritage restarted barely 3 months ago, and this is already its second variance request. Since 2025, Sable has received at least 11 emergency variances covering every facility in the Santa Ynez unit. 11. This community learned at Refugio what happens when an operator treats compliance and regulators defer. Variance after variance turns enforcement relief into standing permission slip to pollute. The criteria are not met, the petition is deficient, the pattern is unmistakable. On behalf of our 8,000 members and the rest of our community, I ask you to reverse the chair's approval, deny this variance, put clean air first. That's how the system's supposed to work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Next, we have Tara Rengifo with the Environmental Defense Center.
Good morning, Chair Dressler and Hearing Board members. My name is Tara Rengifo. I'm a senior attorney with the Environmental Defense Center. My testimony today is made on behalf of our clients, EDC, Get Oil Out, Sierra Club, SB Channel Keeper, and SB Can. My remarks will be followed by EDC's legal fellow, Ryan Smith. We respectfully request denial of Sable's petition for variance for two reasons. First, the required findings cannot be made. This is not a ministerial check-the-box decision. This is a discretionary decision by a quasi-judicial body. If the board is to grant the variance, there must be a clear analytic route from evidence to action. The failure to do so would result in a prejudicial abuse of discretion, and mere conclusory findings without reference to the record are inadequate. The findings required by Health and Safety Code Section 42352 cannot be made. My colleague will focus on A2, and I will talk about A5 specifically today. Attachment B for the variance period's unplanned flaring emission in Sable's July 15th report fails to demonstrate that Sable reduced excess emissions to the maximum extent feasible during the period the variance was in effect. No evidence was offered today in testimony to demonstrate otherwise. Furthermore, the board must assess whether the excess emissions will cause injury, detriment, nuisance, or annoyance to the public, or will endanger the comfort, repose, health, or safety of the public. And in doing so, the board should assess at minimum the specific type and amount of excess emissions, a comparison to the emissions allowed in Sable's permit, a comparison of the emissions sought by the petition for variance as compared to the emissions that would otherwise occur during shutdown of the platform. And second, Sable reported on July 15th that compliance was achieved, but this is a red herring. The unplanned flaring volume in Sable's permits are a quarterly metric. Since the new quarter started on July 1st, their quarterly flare volume limits essentially reset. This is a technicality, not an adequate showing of compliance. We implore the board to ask for more information to determine whether Sable has corrected the issues that led to their violations in the previous quarter. For example, Sable testified today about the sweet gas issues. I heard, and could ask the board could ask for clarification, but that they were in the final stages of that issue. So what does that mean? What does the timeline look like? What other issues may still arise, or what else needs to be done? Those types of questions. Accordingly, we respectfully request that Sable's petition be denied and that Sable be required to come into immediate compliance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Ryan Smith with the Environmental Defense Center.
Good morning, Chair Dressler and Hearing Board members. My name is Ryan Smith, and I'm a legal fellow with the Environmental Defense Center. I'm here today to respectfully request that the board deny Sable's petition for variance because Sable has not provided the factual evidence necessary for the board to make the required findings. My comments will focus on the second finding required by the Health and Safety Code Section 423.52A2. Specifically, that Sable has not provided sufficient evidence that one, the conditions leading to the excess flaring were beyond their reasonable control, two, requiring compliance would result in an unreasonable taking of property, or three, requiring compliance would result in the practical closing and elimination of a lawful business. Beginning with my first point, Sable alleged conditions that led to the unpermitted flaring, but it hasn't provided evidence that it was beyond the company's ability to control. Section 423.52.5 requires that when the board analyzes this condition, it must consider what actions the petitioner has taken to comply with the permit. But the petitioner hasn't provided sufficient evidence showing that the flaring was unforeseeable or unavoidable. In fact, Sable was aware of the emission limits when it restarted Platform Heritage and knew that there was a possibility that issues would occur during restart. It could have waited until its gas pipeline was available or developed a plan to curtail its flaring in the event it was on track to exceed the emission limits. The record fails to demonstrate how avoiding a violation here would have been beyond the company's ability to reasonably control. The board must also consider what actions the petitioner has taken since the variance was sought. Sable's July 15th report shows it continued to make significant unplanned emissions through the end of the variance period, and Sable hasn't provided sufficient evidence to demonstrate that they are likely to remain in compliance in the current quarter. Second, the record does not show that requiring Sable to comply with the permit conditions would result in a taking. In fact, there is no taking where Sable is in violation of its permit, and Sable is still able to operate its other two platforms to meet its obligations. Which brings me to my final point. Requiring compliance would not result in the practical closing or elimination of Sable's business. Sable has three offshore platforms. The hearing board's decision today pertains only to Platform Heritage. Sable can still operate at Platform Harmony and Platform Hondo. Sable has not presented any evidence that requiring Heritage to comply with the APCD's air quality permits would eliminate that business. For these reasons, the findings required by A2 cannot be made, and the petition must be denied. Denial would be consistent with APCD's overarching duty to protect the people and the environment of Santa Barbara County from the effects of air pollution. Thank you for your time and thoughtful consideration.
Thank you.
Next, we have Molly Troop with the Santa Barbara Channel Keeper.
Good morning, Chair Dressler and members of the hearing board. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment today on the issue of Sable Offshore exceeding its air pollution limits set in permits provided by this body. My name is Molly Troop, and I am the Science and Program Manager at Santa Barbara Channel Keeper, a local environmental nonprofit with a mission to protect and restore the Santa Barbara Channel and its watersheds. I attended the June 25th hearing and requested that the APCD deny Zabel's application for a variance for its air permit pollution limits because of our concerns of Zabel's stated unexpected number of equipment malfunctions, which ultimately led to or resulted in the exceedance of air quality limits set in their permit as they are attempting to bring end-of-life equipment back online that had been shut down for over a decade. After listening to testimony made by Zabel, including a statement that immediate compliance would result in loss of revenue of approximately $1.75 million per day, it was surprising to hear the hearing board chair state that he was able to make the six findings to required to make to approve the variance. It is the job of the APCD to protect air quality and not polluters. The argument that if compliance with regulations is too costly and therefore an acceptable reason to exceed permit requirements is simply inappropriate. We would like to see the APCD deny Zabel's request for a variance and for Zabel to resolve the underlying equipment issues rather than be granted an exemption to the requirements. The mission of the APCD is to protect the people and the environment of Santa Barbara County from the effects of air pollution. We're here today to ask you to make decisions that are in line with your mission. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, now moving on to members who would like to provide public comment via Zoom. One thing I will note for those members on Zoom, I don't see a timer on here. So just to let you know, we are limiting public comments to 3 minutes and I will alert you when those 3 minutes are up. So first off, we have Brooke Baltasar. Brooke, I've unmuted you. Please feel free to begin your public comment when you are ready.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Brooke, 1 sec.
We don't see them either on our screen or over there, and it's hard to see the screen on the side.
For most of our public comments, they will not be allowed to turn on their video. All right. Sorry about that, Brooke. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Chair Dressler and members of the hearing board. My name is Brooke Balthaser, and I'm the community organizing manager at Climate First Replacing Oil and Gas, or CFROG. I'm here to respectfully request that this board deny Zabel's petition for variance. Rubber stamping variances for any company, especially one that has proven time and time again that it has no respect or regard for our state or local laws and regulations, or public health and safety for that matter, is unacceptable. Holding Zabel accountable to air pollution limits is not an unreasonable burden. It is simply a cost of doing business here. The public is not concerned with Zabel's profit margins. We're concerned if the air we're breathing is safe or not. The district's mission statement reads, to protect the people and environment of Santa Barbara County from the effects of air pollution. Yet allowing Zabel to violate air pollution limits and contributing to worsening air quality and public health outcomes is in direct contradiction with this mission. Actions like these weaken public trust in the agency and enable more disrespect for Santa Barbara and our laws meant to protect public health and the environment. The people you serve hold you to a higher standard than handing out free passes to polluters. Protecting our clean air by rejecting Zabel's demand for a variance is the bare minimum. It's time to hold polluters accountable and demonstrate a commitment to public health, community safety, and compliance over corporate profits. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brooke. Next up is Miyoko Sakashida with the Center for Biological Diversity. Miyoko, I've unmuted you. Please feel free to begin your public comment when you are ready.
Oh, apologies. This is Brady Bradshaw. The wrong Zoom oh. name. My name is Brady Bradshaw. I work with the Center for Biological Diversity. I would like to respectfully request that the board deny Zabel's request for a variance. There are several findings that this board cannot make, but I want to focus on finding number 2 and the Zabel representative's characterization that the restart was ordered by executive order. Zabel had the opportunity to comply with state laws and even received a waiver from pipeline safety standards from the Office of the State Fire Marshal initially, but then which was later made conditional upon Zabel completing pipeline safety repairs that were necessary for restart. Instead of undergoing the proper process laid out by the fire marshal, Zabel asked for the federal government to step in and preempt state authority. It is not proper to characterize this restart as simply being ordered by the federal government, because Sable on multiple occasions appealed to the federal government to step in and eliminate state requirements at its request. But the Defense Production Act order never actually ordered restart, but rather that Sable prioritize and allocate pipeline transportation services for hydrocarbons and, quote, commence performance under contracts. Sable could have complied with the order by prioritizing approvals and compliance and then restarting once they were all obtained, but chose instead to restart absent all necessary approvals. This is a pattern that we've seen again and again as Sable has navigated being under many notices of violation and cease and desist orders from state agencies, the pattern of noncompliance and disregard for state laws and environmental protections has been very clear. The fact that the federal government here is undermining state and local ability to protect the public health and the environment underscores the need for this hearing board to do its duty for the county and to stand up for clean air and for public health. Thank you very much. Again, I request that this board deny Sable's request for a variance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next one is Jeremy Nichols. Jeremy, whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you. I'll lower my hand here. Good morning, members of the hearing board. My name is Jeremy Nichols. I'm a senior advocate, also with the Center for Biological Diversity. I've been submitting our written filings in this matter and hope you've had a chance to review those. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on Sable Offshore Corporation's latest petition for a variance from compliance with its air pollution operating permit for the Heritage Platform. As you hopefully have seen in our written filings, we oppose Sable's petition and believe this board is duty-bound to deny the request. Putting aside serious questions around Sable's factual assertions and the company's apparent pattern and practice of recently seeking variances from this board, it's clear this latest request simply does not fully satisfy the six criteria for obtaining a variance. I want to focus on the second criteria. Section 42352, paragraph A2 of the California Health and Safety Code is clear that for a variance to be granted, there must be a finding that compliance would either lead to an arbitrary and unreasonable taking of property or the practical closing and elimination of a lawful business. I won't repeat all we've already presented in writing, but suffice it to say, denying the variance will not lead to any taking of property, whether arbitrary or unreasonable, and will not lead to the practical closing and elimination of a lawful business. On the former point, as we highlight in our filings, Sable's own operating permit for the Heritage Platform states that it does not convey property rights or exclusive privilege of any sort. Given this, it is simply not possible for any taking of property to occur in relation to enforcing the terms and conditions of the operating permit. Sable suggests that Section 42352.5, paragraph A2 of the Health and Safety Code states that in determining whether a reasonable delay or unreasonable taking or practical closure would occur, the board must only consider whether or not an unreasonable burden would be imposed upon the company if immediate compliance is required. In other words, because Sable asserts compliance is unreasonable, compliance must be considered a taking of property or practical closure. This interpretation is ridiculous. Section 42532.5, paragraph A2, simply requires the board to consider the implications of immediate compliance upon Sable. Does not suggest that it can ignore its duty to determine whether or not an unreasonable taking of property or practical closure would actually occur. Putting this aside, it's clear that immediate compliance is not unreasonable. Sable itself represents that it has brought the Heritage Platform into compliance. It's clear Sable hasn't met its burden to obtain a variance, but it's this board's duty to conduct an investigation and make its own findings of fact. We urge this board to conduct an inquiry and not simply rubber stamp claims and assertions made by Sable in its self-serving attempt to avoid accountability with its permit. This permit is in place to protect public health and the environment. We urge the board to act accordingly. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Bill Hickman. Bill, I've turned your mic on. Feel free to start whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Bill Hickman with the Surf Rider Foundation, and I'm basically going to echo all of the previous speakers, so I'll be brief. Allowing Sable to violate air pollution limits and add more toxic pollutants to our air is unacceptable. The APCD is meant to protect air quality, not polluters. Sable is violating many state laws and agency orders. Handing out free passes to pollute shows disrespect for Santa Barbara and laws meant to protect the environment and public health. Please protect our clean air and reject Sable's demand for a variance. It's time to hold polluters accountable. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right, and last up, we have Bill Woodbridge. Bill, whenever you're ready.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Bill Woodbridge from Goleta. I urge this commission to deny Sable's request for this variance. They are living on variances. 11. That is allowing them to exist. How many more variances are they going to request? And why do we give them 11 already? This is a lawless, criminal organization that thumbs its nose at any regulations, any orders, doesn't pay its fines, and acts like a weasel looking for any other hole to pop up out of when something occurs that they don't like. They will use any lawful or unlawful method to continue their efforts at polluting the air. They don't care if they're polluting the air. To give their CEO a $75 million bonus or whatever, and then claim that they can't afford a $175 million a day loss while they fix whatever should have been fixed is just a criminal in and of itself. This organization does not deserve to be trusted. It does not comply with any regulations of the state or any permit requirements. It just bulldozes its way across anybody and anything that tries to get in its way. So I urge the commission to please do your duty, do what you're here for, represent the people of the county and our health and our clean air, and deny Sable's request. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Chair Dressler, members of the hearing board, that concludes all the public comments.
Is there any other public comment? I will close public comment on this matter. All right, I will bring this back to the board for discussion.
So I have one question for district staff and council. So the variance period is complete, right? So it went through June 30th and we're after that. So what would be the ramification of denying the variance given that it's effectively that term is complete?
District staff?
Hi, this is Caitlin McNally from the district. And my understanding is that if the full board denies the variance, it effectively supersedes the decision made by the chair on June 25th. And there would be 5 days that Sable was in violation. The district would issue a violation and then settle that violation for monetary penalties.
Okay, thank you. And then some of the public comments also mentioned the July 15th report. Is there a copy of that available?
I can circulate a copy of that after this meeting.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, because that was one of my questions related specifically to finding 6 on monitoring and reporting emissions. And so seeing that that's been completed, I think that's helpful for making that finding that, you know, Sable did file that report and completed their tracking of the emissions that were required by the variance.
I have regarding that, district staff, for district staff, I just wanted to verify that, have you received that report and reviewed it?
Again, Caitlin McNally with the district. We did receive that report on July 15th. However, we have not had a chance to review it yet. We have staff out of the office right now that normally do that work.
Thank you.
And then I have another question for staff. So Sable testified that the excess air emissions were 0.04 tons, and then also that their air permit is 8.5 million cubic feet. What's the conversion between the two? One's a weight, one's a volume.
Again, Caitlin McNally with the district. Are you asking what the quarterly emission limit is for unplanned flaring, or what answer are you looking for?
I think Sable is also looking for the answer, but yeah, so Sable testified that their emission exceedance, they reported it in units of tons.
Yes.
But then they also said what their permit limit was, and they used units of volume. So just looking from clarity, okay. Even from Sable.
Yeah, so I believe that they were referring to the amount of the volume that can be flared or is allowed to be flared under unplanned flaring. But we do have in the permit the emission limits in ton per quarter for each of the different criteria pollutants. And for example, the NOx ton per quarter emission limit for unplanned flaring is 0.35 tons per quarter. I believe the amount that Sable reported in their testimony was a total for ROC, NOx, and PM, I believe I heard. And I don't have that total calculated in front of me, but as I said, NOx is 0.35 tons per quarter, ROC is 0.61 tons per quarter, and PM is 0.1 tons per quarter, it looks like. So, sorry, I don't have a calculator right on me right now, but if that helps give you an idea of what the permit emission limits are. And then Sable, you're welcome to add any additional information you'd like.
Thank you, Member Cook. Patrice Stromeyer would be happy to address that, as well as confirm, as she is sworn in under oath, that Sable did satisfy its July 15th reporting obligation. And I invite Patrice to the podium.
Good morning, Commissioner Cook. What is your exact question that I could answer for you?
I just wanted to clarify what the excess emissions were relative to the permitted amount.
I don't have the permitted emissions in front of me, but the combined NOx, ROC, and PM emissions, which were reported in that quarter in the report for the variance, was 0.04 tons of the combined emissions. And I believe Ms. Saperstein, or not, excuse me, what's Caitlin's last name? Ms. McNally, I think she has the permit right in front of her, and so she can probably tell you the permitted emissions.
Yeah, thank you.
Is that all you?
Yeah, my question's answered. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
A few questions. First, process. So whether we vote to approve the variance request or deny it, what's the next litigation step process for that? I'm not aware of it. Does it go to the APC board itself and then potentially to Superior Court?
Chair, members of the board, my understanding is that there is a process where the decision can be taken to the Superior Court, but my understanding is that the decision at this level ends at this point after the decision today.
It does not go to the full board. Okay. So there were a few arguments in some of the papers that I'm interested in, so I apologize to sort of be a little bit all over the place. There were arguments that, notwithstanding EPA's change of policy, that this permit should get a relook, that it actually, given the 10-year shutdown, it should be qualifies for a new permit rather than continuation of the existing permit. Has the district staff done a legal evaluation of that alternative approach to this facility?
This is Caitlin McNally with the district again. I apologize. We do not have anybody here from our permitting group, but my understanding is that, yes, we did look at that and that we determined that the existing permits in place do cover the restart operations and no new permit is necessary just for restarting. However, new permits could be necessary for new equipment that is brought in place for the restart.
And I think also Sable testified that the permit was issued in 2023 to Exxon and then transferred the following year. So it's more recent
than the shutdown.
So perhaps somebody could help me out understanding which permit covers sort of which portions of the operation.
Go ahead.
So the Sable has five permits to operate, one for each platform. And they are, as you are probably aware, regularly reevaluated. So the most recent permit that we discussed that Exxon received was the last reevaluation, and then that last reevaluation was transferred to us. So it's the same permit for the original facility, and then every few years it gets reevaluated.
And gets reevaluated without any consideration of, is this 10-year shutdown sort of qualify it now as a new facility? And permitting as a new facility rather than just reevaluating the existing permits, and do they roughly accommodate operations?
Every reevaluation looks at like any changes to the rules that have occurred during that period, and that would actually probably be something the APCD could speak to more clearly.
Is there a written record of those evaluations anywhere?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a process that you have to go through each time.
Caitlin, is that in the APCD files?
Yes. So, yeah, we do have a current part, what we call Part 70 permit reevaluation that is in effect for Platform Heritage that was issued, as Patrice said, in February of 2023. And that permit is on file and also available on our permitted facilities map for the public to view that permit document.
So this may be an unfair question, it's way too broad. Has there been any material modifications to the 2023 permit compared to the original permit for the facility? And again, just maybe way too broad of a question.
I can speak to that very generally. So the original permit to the facility was issued many, many years ago. And as changes are made, those changes are incorporated into the main permit reevaluation. So if new pieces of equipment are added, they're issued new permits, and then those are rolled into the main permit. So there have been changes, but I do not know the specifics of what has changed since the permit was originally issued for Platform Heritage.
Could I add a little bit to that? So in the permits themselves, it documents all the changes. So it's like one of the first sections of the permit. It shows every single change that's been made essentially to the permit during the revaluations or any in-between changes.
Thank you. So we've had the discussion I'm going to start in a multiple different set of clothes for different types of facilities, other offshore platforms where we are faced either with the problem of quarterly monitoring that resets, and so we're in this continuous loop, and I appreciate the frustration in this continuous loop. So whether good or bad for Sable, their violation occurred near the end of the reporting period, so restart, they get a big breath of fresh air, and we won't know until some point in this next cycle process whether any of the changes are lasting, meaningful. That's frustrating. It's not Sable's problem. It's not the public's problem. It's partly a product of the permitting construction, I think, for lack of a better description. And I don't know how we get out of that. So, because the reality is, I shouldn't say the reality is. I've heard no one speak to the argument that shutdown or shut in, whether temporary or lasting, would, maybe I should ask it as a question, Caitlin. Can the district confirm the representation that responding to this violation in some meaningful operation that would reduce the processing of material would result in a greater air quality emission than continuous operation? And we've heard that again for multiple different permits, that they're structured around continuous operation. And so any deviation from continuous operation results in a potential violation, and it sets up the argument that, well, shoot, if we change our operations, we're going to have an exceedance far in excess of what the air quality limits are. And that's, again, frustrating for us. If that's the reality, that's the district's problem to think of a different way to structure these permits, because there has to be a different set of criteria to evaluate the on-off switch of responding to a violation that doesn't result in greater exceedances. And maybe it's just a practical impossibility. Maybe in engineering.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you could do something like a moving average of monthly emissions, but I think, you know, in this case, Sable's production at Heritage started 1 week before the quarterly allotment started, and then just under a week before it ended, you know, they realized, okay, we're going to be over the emission limit, and they ended up over by about 4% for total emissions for the quarter, which is a quarter of essentially full restart. So I think even if you had something like that designed into the permit, you'd probably still have the violation in this case.
And then the argument, though, supporting the permit is, if we do anything dramatic to respond to that exceedance, we're going to release more, create a larger air quality problem than just getting the variance and allowing us some time to correct it, assuming it's easily correctable. And I don't know how we get ourselves out of that.
I believe that this is characteristic of the difference between very simple sources of air pollution. A gas station, for instance. If a gas station is in violation and you make them shut down the gas station, okay, then the pollution just goes away.
It's temporary, okay? It's easy.
If you have a complex industrial site where there's a lot of moving parts and the shutting down of the facility, whether it's an oil gas facility or any other very complex facility, can actually produce more emissions in the short term than the small amount of emissions that they're asking relief from. And the thing is that when the health and safety code was written and a lot of rules and regulations are written, they're written for everybody.
Yeah.
And the smaller, simpler sources respond to the potential of shutdown as far as what the excess emissions would be, a lot different than a large complex source.
And that's where we are. I get it. That's where we are. And it's very unsatisfying me as a resident of Santa Barbara County to have to say to folks what the permittee did is exactly what was expected of them. They responded to the problem. It's not like shutting down a gas station where we just turn the power off and nobody's going to pump gas anymore at this gas station. If I'm to believe the testimony, we've heard this from others than Sable, whether you like it coming out of Sable's mouth or not. We've heard it from every operator of these major facilities that it is dangerous, it's a monstrous ordeal to shut down a facility like that. So we're left with no choice. They come in asking for a variance, and it's sort of kabuki dance. We don't have a good choice of what to tell a permittee, because the best I can hope for is, well, you get the variance and don't come back next quarter. Because what? We'll face the same problem and the criteria is the same. I don't know how we deal
with that. Yeah, I have one question for Sable related to that. So as mentioned in some of the public comments and filings, Sable has been issued a large number of variances for the different facilities. I'm curious why Sable doesn't try to pursue a regular variance, which has a longer term versus interim or 90-day variances for each pop-up issue.
Thank you, Commissioner Cook, for letting me describe that more. As discussed, there's been 11 emergency variances. Five of them were for the semi-annual report. So they had no emissions. The person that was working on it got COVID, so we turned in the report 15 days late. I believe 15 days late. Well, we didn't turn it in late, but we got a variance that allowed us to turn it in at a later date. Three of them were related to things that had no emission impacts at all, like like a monitor that wasn't quite working right, or when we couldn't get like a sample that we had to get. So again, no emission related things at all. And then two of them were related to very small emission issues that like we were having trouble trying to like get something to work right. And in those cases, between them, it was 10 pounds of emissions. So they were extremely small. I don't want to say inconsequential, but very small situations that were following the process that we're supposed to use. Each one of our permits is like 300 pages long or more. So all the different requirements are extremely complex, and we use the emergency variance process if there's things like being unable to turn a report in by a particular date because of, you know, some outstanding situation. The only other one was the Harmony Flare one, which was similar to the one we've asked for today.
Yeah, and then again, kind of going back to the prior testimony on the difference between Harmony and Heritage is Harmony's recommissioning was primarily operations folks on the platform, and this also incorporates some of the best practice from Las Flores.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we brought it up, because we learned from Harmony that this would be a better way to do it. And so that's why we particularly brought it up. That was one of the big lessons learned from Harmony. Did you have more questions?
I had a question on a different topic. Well, I mean, obviously this on this variance, but in a different area. So the variance petition talks about establishing the offshore to shore pipeline usage. And I was, you know, wanted to know what was the overlap between the pipeline between what is already functioning for Harmony versus what needs to be done for Heritage to use that same pipeline.
Yeah, so there are individual pipelines between the platforms, right? So the gas pipeline from Heritage goes across ultimately to platform Hondo, which then comes to shore. So the Harmony to Hondo, Hondo to shore line has been in service. The Heritage gas line had been preserved and maintained, which is why we couldn't put these wet, heavy hydrocarbons in that pipeline, creating further issues that would go downstream. So there was nothing in the pipeline side that needed to be done. It is just, you know, from a integrity and safety perspective, not putting those gases that were not designed to be in that pipeline in that pipeline.
And this is a vapor pipeline?
It's dry gas.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then that's
so we have an emulsion pipeline separate that transmits the oil and water to shore.
Okay, and then kind of going into that, and then one of the other public comments on like conditioning the gas for that pipeline. So the reason that you're not using it right now is because the essentially sweet gas production isn't dry enough, and it would basically foul
any gas production is not dry. So we use the central process heater on the platforms to power the gas conditioning equipment that removes the water and removes the heavier hydrocarbons from the gas. So the sweet gas is needed for the central process heater to allow us to run the gas conditioning equipment, if that makes any sense. So our production heater is now online. We are doing our final commissioning, which means circulating the systems, getting them ready to go before we send the gas stream through the gas conditioning, ultimately allowing the pipeline, the Heritage to Hondo pipeline to be used. So we're in a matter of weeks, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, then to confirm, so it's Heritage to Hondo, then Hondo to shore?
Correct. So all the gas lines go to Hondo, come to shore. All the emulsion lines go to Platform Harmony and then come to shore.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Any further questions? All right. So now it's up to us to determine whether or not we can make findings. I guess we can just go down them one at a time. So whether or not Sable is or will be in violation was testified to by the applicant, and I so I think that that is under oath, and so I think that the finding number one is one that we can make. Are we in agreement with that?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Finding number two, that noncompliance is due to conditions beyond a reasonable control. And that's the first part of that finding. And we heard testimony today that they went into great detail about what they did to try to keep that from happening. And it happened anyway. Yeah. So let's talk about that finding.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, things that weigh into whether or not it was within their reasonable control. They had previously filed for a variance for Harmony after its recommissioning, and then took best practices both from that and the more complex Las Flores Canyon to do a revisit of platform heritage. And by their testimony, it's been over $100 million, over 100 staff on board, over a dozen different outside subject matter experts in their recommissioning process for the platform, and they still encountered equipment failures. I think that's something that happens when you have that many pieces of equipment on a platform, right? So, I mean, if you do the due diligence to test the equipment and then start running it in production and it fails, I think that's something that's beyond your reasonable control. That would be my comment there.
And what's the alternative? So what could have been done that would be more reasonable? I don't know. Is there something more that could have been done?
I don't know. If you think, if you Monday morning quarterback it and say, could we have done a little bit of further testing on the pressure relief system? Or they already said that they put nitrogen gas in the pressure relief system and pumped it up to 95% of its capacity, and it didn't leak. And then when they started operating, it started to leak. So I don't know what else you would do. You test your pressure relief system with an inert gas before you've even put any hydrocarbons in it, and then you put hydrocarbons in it and it starts to leak. I don't know what else you would have done. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, it seems like due diligence to me.
Yeah. Looking back at it from hindsight, is there something more that Sable could have done?
In hindsight, there's always something, right? I will say we took extensive efforts to try to prevent this, right? So, I mentioned these 13 safety valves that failed. Six of those were brand new that we bought because the one that was in place wasn't adequate, right? So we buy new valves, buy new equipment, install them, test them, everything looks good, and then we go to service and it fails. I even have a hard time saying, well, I'd replace every valve with new things because it wouldn't solve the problem. Could it have reduced the problem? Maybe. But, we were very diligent in testing and retesting. So to say that we tested the relief system once, it was months of work, test, retest, fix issues, repair, retest again. So certainly there's things we could have done with the benefit of hindsight. I think when you look at the effort and the magnitude of the replacement, repair, and testing campaign that we did at Heritage, even compared to what we did at Harmony, it's like we tried to do everything that we could. We really did. So I can't think of anything that would have totally prevented this. I mean, The point is, you know, these facilities are complex, much like many other manufacturing businesses. The most difficult time in any reliability scale is at the beginning of the process and the end of life, right? Those are your highest failure rates. And that's where we are. We took an existing facility, replaced a lot of equipment, and we still had some unexpected failures.
Yeah, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask if any other members of the public, I'm not looking for additional public comment, I'm looking for any other specific thoughts on something that Sable could have, practical things Sable could have done to foresee this kind of problem, short of choosing not to restart the facility.
I think we'd have to get that under oath, you know.
So anyone that is already taken the oath that has something helpful on that question, I'd appreciate hearing it. So otherwise, what we're left with is, it appears pretty reasonable conduct.
Caitlin, do you have input into this?
Yes, Caitlin McNally with the district. I am not aware of anything else that Sable could have done to prevent this, but you know, I do want to caveat that with the district staff are not experts in oil and gas operations and how to, you know, the ins and outs of that, but we are not aware of anything that could have been done.
Thank you.
So I think we're left with making that finding.
That second finding, that compliance is due to conditions beyond the reasonable control.
Yeah.
Can you can make that finding?
Yes.
I can too. Can you?
Yes.
Okay. Now let's go on to the second part of that. That compliance would result in the unreasonable taking of property or the closing of the business. Now, I myself, and I said this in the previous hearing, am not even going to go to the takings part. Because I don't think this is a takings issue, but it's either or in the health and safety code. And so I didn't make a takings finding at the original hearing, and I'm not prepared to make a takings finding at this hearing. I do want to talk about the closing of the platform. I can't think of any other way that they could go into complete immediate compliance without closing the platform. Let's discuss that.
That's the testimony we've heard. It's the testimony we hear in almost all of these circumstances, is that it's effectively a shutdown of the business. That's in this instance, that's what would have been required to stop that exceedance.
Right.
It would have caused other problems.
Right.
I do think that maybe some more clarity on how it would result in a shutdown of the facility. Right, because the facility was not operational 4 months ago. So I think maybe some more information from Sable on how the startup has
how immediate
that.
Compliance would have resulted in the shutdown of the entire platform.
Or are we over dramatizing what could have been an appropriate response?
Well, I can only speak to the emissions part of it, and maybe Trent can speak to the rest, but I mean, the only way to stop all the flaring is to empty all the vessels, which means completely shutting down the platform and emptying all the equipment, which, as was discussed by Trent, that couldn't even happen in 40 days. And that's the only way that you would totally stop the flaring.
And Patrice, I didn't hear that it wouldn't have happened in how many days did you say?
Way more than 40 days.
Yeah, I heard
yeah,
40.
I mean, it took them 10 months to empty everything out and get everything preserved at when we had to shut down in 2015.
Otherwise, it's either a safety issue or you have
Well, you have flaring, right? Yeah, I mean, you have hydrocarbons on the platform, yeah. And so you will have some flaring. You can't stop that.
It is a feature of having this facility, anywhere, having this type of facility. It's a feature of the facility.
Yeah, I mean, if you have hydrocarbons in a vessel, there is the opportunity for them to flare, and you have to have the ability to flare them for safety.
There are no production platforms in the world that do not have flare systems.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I think I'm okay now.
Okay. So it would have, you know, causing immediate compliance would have caused the shutdown of the platform. And we can make that finding.
And that is the interpretation we've consistently applied in other variant circumstances, yes, to this. Whether that's the appropriate interpretation or not, leave that to a potentially court to examine. But okay, that has been our consistent approach to these.
Okay. So now let's move on to the closing would be without a corresponding benefit to reducing air pollution. What I heard was the complete shutdown and depressurization, 17 tons combined versus 0.04 tons of the violation.
Yeah.
That's a pretty stark difference in numbers. That the closing would be without a corresponding benefit.
Yes, agreed. And closing would be, you know, based off of Kayla McNally's testimony of what the permitted levels are. That's over 4 years worth of emission limits in one go.
4 years, you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're back to the general community's attitude about this facility is we don't want it here at all. So in 5 years, we've been blessed. But yeah, in 4 years, it's a problem.
Right.
And we're not going to solve whether the facility's here or not.
So we can make that finding?
I believe so, yes.
Yes.
All right. We heard testimony that they did look at three alternative containment scenarios. That each one of them would have required the emissions of more emissions than the variance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So we can make the finding that they did consider curtailing and they in the curtailment actually resulted in more emissions. Okay. Number five, during the period of the variance is in effect, the excess emissions would be reduced to the maximum extent feasible. I heard testimony that they took those types of actions. And then number six.
I'd like to go back to five.
Okay.
And
let's go back
here again from Sable on what efforts were taken. I mean, I think maybe just to clarify, we're talking about ensuring sweet gas was available so that gas could be conditioned, and then that would reduce unplanned flare events on the platform. Is that correct? And is that one of the avenues to reduce
that's
emissions?
One of the issues, yes, sir. Yes. So a big part of that, we talked about stabilization of gas compressors, right? So not all wells on Platform Heritage were producing. We made the choice to leave certain wells offline so that we could stabilize these compressors, because every well fluctuates in its rate, right? So if we can get enough wells in the system that we have more stable flow to those compressors, the chances that they will trip go down. So when we talk about the stabilization of those compressors, we are making choices to not bring on additional oil wells so that we ensure that the compressors are running smoothly. That makes
okay.
any sense.
Yeah, thank you. I think I can make the finding.
Yes.
I can make the finding as well. So number six, During the period the variance is in effect, excess emissions will be quantified and monitored. We heard testimony today that they did that, and they actually have submitted that report to the district.
Yes, we heard both testimony that the report was received and what the exact emission excess was.
All right. So we have gone through the findings, and we have made all six findings. Is there further discussion? Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to grant the variance.
Do I have a second?
Could we take 5 minutes?
Okay, we'll have a 5 minute break. All right, the meeting's back in order. I have a motion on the floor. Do I have a second?
I think you could second.
I'll second the motion. Lori, do we need to call the roll?
No, we do not.
I have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Thank you. This meeting is now adjourned till September 2nd at 9:30 a.m. There have been no petitions received for the meeting in August. The September meeting is subject to cancellation if there are no items before us.
Thank you.